It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. Sign up for our weekly newsletter at the website. You will get first look at all of the upcoming guests as well as the latest op-eds and Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts. So be sure and do that. We've got a great show planned for you today. We're going to go through a number of headlines today. There's a lot going on. Of course, the RNC convention started yesterday. I watched part of it, and it was very uplifting. And so I'm very excited to watch the rest of it as well. Did you watch it, Producer Steve?
I did. I aggressively pursued it as opposed to last week. And it was nice to see some reality instead of I don't know what you would call last week.
Yeah, there was. I was really moved by the woman who basically, she was on her deathbed. People said that she was not going to survive. And because of the policies of President Trump, the right to try, she survived. I thought that was a very emotional presentation, Steve.
Yeah, maybe that's when we were just getting into it. Actually, I mean, this is probably not the right time to say this, but I got really upset right up front because I first started watching. I realized the major networks at 7 o'clock were not carrying it. So I went over to PBS, and, it was obvious they were carrying it. But the second the first speaker was done, I caught CBS doing it later, about closer to 9. A speaker would finish, and then they would shuttle you off to their panel to tell you what you just heard. And you know what that means.
I mean,
wait a minute, let's tell you what you really heard. Not what you think you heard, but what you really heard. So I switched to an online feed, and things were much better.
Yeah, that's what I watched as well. So, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. But, I thought that was very uplifting. So, and that goes on for tonight, tomorrow night, and it finishes up on Thursday. We're going to run through some headlines here in just a moment. Number one thing I want to make sure that is on your radar is the I'm a Trumpster Minority Bus Tour is going to be kicked off this Friday, 4:30, and the location is 401 West 43rd. And what Reggie and Johnny would like is a motorcade. So show up with your car, with flags, and we hope to have 100 cars to do this inaugural kickoff for this bus. And we'll go through some of the streets of Denver. And so be a part of history, because these guys are really going to make a difference. And as you all know, we were working. Our goal was to raise over $10,000 to get the vinyl wrap for the bus. And actually, Steve, I think that we probably came in above $13,000. So thank you to each of you that contributed. And of course, if you've not received your battle mask yet, please email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And I will make sure that that is mailed to you. Or if you show up on Friday, we'll give it to you then. But that is pretty amazing news, Producer Steve.
It is. And in case you're that particular address that you just quoted, if you're curious what part of town that is, think of the intersection of 70 and 25. It's in the southwest corner of that intersection within a couple blocks. So that's the area we're talking about.
Okay, and that is 401 West 43rd. Be there at 4:30. And that's going to be really, really important. They're going to be taking this bus into minority communities. I've actually seen pictures of it, and it is pretty darn amazing. We look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. And remember, my friends, it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, or fear. If something is a good idea, you don't need force to implement it. And the questions that you need to ask are what and why and when and how and where and who. And those questions were asked by Rudyard Kipling. He is the author of The Jungle Book. He was born in 1865, and he died in 1936. I always like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with. That is Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. And thank you to each of you listeners. You have a purpose today. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. I appreciate each and every one of you. Our wisdom for today is from James Madison. You know him. He was an American statesman, diplomat, expansionist, philosopher, and founding father who served as the fourth president of the United States from 1809 to 1817. He is hailed as the father of the Constitution for his pivotal role in drafting and promoting the Constitution of the United States and the United States Bill of Rights. He was born in 1751. He died in 1836. And he says, I cannot undertake to lay my finger on that article of the Constitution, which granted a right to Congress of expending on objects of benevolence the money of their constituents. Aha. So kind of a proper role of government thing on that. And let's go through just a few headlines here. Let's see. The first one. Oh, I find this so interesting, Steve. This is from the Colorado Sun. As you know, John Caldera and over at the Independence Institute, they have a ballot question this upcoming November to lower Colorado's income taxes just a little bit. And interestingly enough, Governor Jared Polis says that he is praising this Republican-backed ballot question to lower Colorado income taxes. It will be Initiative 306. It's a ballot measure that would permanently reduce the state income tax rate to 4.55% from 4.63%. Governor Polis praised it, but he stopped from actually totally endorsing it.
What does that mean?
I don't know for sure. Could it be playing some politics? Because most people do like to have their taxes lowered. And so next, what we're going to be doing here, you know, I think I want to talk about this other one as well. And this is a vote on fees. This is from the Center Square. It's an initiative to require voter approval of some state enterprises that draw their revenue from fees. And it's been approved to get onto the November ballot. Colorado Rising State Action, the conservative advocacy group backing the initiative 295, turned in more than 196,000 signatures in July. 138,000, just almost 139,000 are valid, and they needed 124,000 to make the ballot. The taxpayer advocacy groups argue that lawmakers may have used fees to, you think, we've seen that all the time, to avoid being subject to the state's Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, a constitutional amendment that requires all tax increases to be approved by voters. Under Tabor, Colorado's Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, state enterprise funds aren't subject to the Tabor's revenue cap. The measure, also called Vote on Fees, would require voter approval for any new state enterprises that are projected to collect more than $100 million in fees or surcharges in its initial 5 years. I find that very exciting as well. So let's jump over here. Chris Cantwell with Trans World Business Advisors, a valued partner of mine, is on the line. Chris, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. How are you?
I am doing well. First thing, I was just talking about this ballot question regarding fees that's going to be on our November ballot. It seems to make a lot of sense that if, in fact, there's fees that are being paid by us and collects more than $100 million, it seems like that's a really good idea to have that on the ballot this year.
Well, yeah. I mean, every which way we turn and look, we're getting charged with something or another through taxes by bureaucrats, and it's as frustrating as it can ever be. And you know, it's the hard thing with businesses these days too, because it just seems like businesses, especially small businesses, are the enemy of government, and probably not government, the enemy of bureaucrats that want to impose so much force on them. And I'll tell you what, the good news is right now, capitalism is winning, because we are seeing so many buyers come to the market who want to get out of their corporate roles and don't want to work for other people. And they're coming to the market to buy businesses and to fight for capitalism and to fight for small businesses. And as I like to say, businesses are out there to provide products and services for people because they value their product or services and it makes their lives better.
And that is true capitalism. I had Alan Thomas on earlier this week, and we talked about the difference between capitalism and cronyism. And capitalism, as you just mentioned, Chris Cantwell, is, you know, is trading value for value. And if somebody has something that other people value, and if a lot of people value it, then they can get enormously wealthy, which I think is just great. Cronyism is actually using government to create wealth for a few by taking it from others.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question, though. Patty had found this headline, and then both in the Business Journal, and then we also found it in The Hill, that some of these small businesses that took these PPP funds actually may have some big tax hits. And so what's your thoughts on that, Chris Cantwell?
You know, it's really still too early to tell, Kim. There's so much communication out there about this and that and everything related to these PPP loans. And, you know, going back to what we talked about a few weeks ago, you know, maybe having Congress just relieve anybody that has a PPP loan under $150,000, to, you know, what are the taxes? What are the all these consequences? There's so many unknowns. And I'll tell you, that's what's the challenge right now in our business transactions. So these PPP loans were given by banks, and every bank has a different philosophy on how to relieve them. So when you go to sell your business and you have this PPP loan out there, some of the banks are saying, well, wait a minute, you can't sell your business. We don't know if this is going to be forgiven or not. There's still too many unknowns, and it's causing some challenges in some of these transactions. Some banks have tied their personal assets, the business's personal assets, to the loans. So there's liens on some of these, which you can't sell a business when there's a lien that can't be relieved. So it's challenging. This is our biggest challenge right now in trying to do some of these transactions, are all of the unknowns. And just every day it seems to change. So we take it one step at a time. So if somebody's out there and thinking about trying to sell their business, or maybe involved in the middle of a transaction and you don't know which way to go, we can kind of help get there. And literally it's one step at a time. It's each bank at a time. So there are definitely some hurdles to doing these transactions right now, all related to these PPP loans. And there's just not a clear answer, which is frustrating.
It is frustrating, but as I was driving in today, I was thinking there is always opportunity. And sometimes, as you mentioned, it's kind of step by step. But Chris, you, Transworld Business Advisors, you can really help people navigate through this. You've got a team of people that you work with. And so would highly recommend that folks, you know, give you a call, because it's a great thing to work for yourself. Certainly it has its challenges, but it's really a great thing, and it's the American idea. So Chris Cantwell, how can people reach you?
Absolutely, Kim, and you're right on. I mean, working for yourself is the best thing ever. And there are certainly those challenges, but at the end of the day, there's so much pride in again, producing products and services that other people value. So, yeah, if you've got questions about selling a business, you've got questions about buying a business, you can call me at 844-SELL-BIZ, B-I-Z, 844-SELL-BIZ, or you can find all my contact information on the KimMonson.com website.
Well, you got it. Chris Cantwell, thank you so much. We will talk to you here very soon, and you have a great day.
Have an amazing day. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. We're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, another of my valued partners is Hooters Restaurants. They have five locations, Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. And they're open for dine-in, to-go, delivery, and curbside service. They have happy hours Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m., half off some of these select appetizers. Wednesdays are Wings Day. They have lunch specials every day. Kids eat free in dining in the restaurant. And, you know, we actually have sports, and they have all kinds of TVs that you can watch all the sports that's going on right now. So more information, go to order.hooters.com. That's order.hooters.com. When we come back, we'll be talking with Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger. This show is brought to you by the Harris family. We'll be talking about America's founding heritage and the important documents and speeches that contributed to that. And it's so important that we know why we believe what we believe, particularly with what's going on in America today. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You will get all the first looks of all of the guests, as well as our most recent op-eds and Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast. We'd appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. Before we get to Ben Martin, I have two new partners, Metropolitan Total Property Care and also Castlegate Knives. And they are a family-owned business located right in Sedalia, Colorado. And they have a wide range of knives to choose from. They have knives for collectors. They have military knives, of course, knives for sportsmen, and then some great gifts. I've got a wedding that I'm going to be going to, and I'm getting a beautiful knife set for that. And, of course, utility knives as well. So for more information, go to castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. And certainly I would really appreciate it if you would, when you're looking for somebody to do business with, all of my great partners I highly endorse. So let's get to it right now. Ben Martin is a patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, has a deep love for the American idea. Ben Martin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much, Kim. How are you doing today?
I am doing just fine. And we've been going through these important documents and speeches. And last time you were on the show, we talked about the Constitution, and right. this show is brought to you by the Harris family. We're very grateful for that. So where do we go from here, Ben Martin?
Well, we did, like you said, we talked about the Constitution and the making of the Constitution last week or last month. And then this month, we're going to talk about the ratification. You know, when the Constitution was made, it was the document. It was not the Constitution yet. It was just the proposed Constitution, and it had to be ratified by the states, and it not really the states, but the people in the states. You know, that's the two ways, and so it's a really important part that we had to do this, and then in so doing, Madison, who was a husbandry guy of all of this, brought it through the process, not only the ratification, but he got himself elected to Congress so that he could put into it the Bill of Rights. So we're going to talk about that today. It's a complicated thing, and it took a lot of effort from a lot of different people, but I think it's really important that we understand it, and we know that just writing the Constitution was one thing, and they did such a great job of doing that, but then you had to get it to the audience. You had to get the audience to accept it. And so that's a really important point.
Okay, so how did they do that, Ben Martin?
Well, that's a good point. I don't know, I was going to ask you. No. Okay. So as you remember, last month, we were talking about the making of the U.S. Constitution, and it was in the hot Philadelphia summer of 1787. And to add to that physical misery of that esteemed group of founders that we call the Framers, the deliberations were conducted in strict secrecy so that the windows and the doors were closed, preventing any air circulation. And you know, they didn't have air conditioning.
Oh, man.
So they were really miserable in there, and they were in their formal dress, you know, because they had to be respectable of each other. And so the building in which these important deliberations was conducted was the venerable Pennsylvania State House, which we affectionately call today Independence Hall. So after spending almost 4 months in that sweltering heat and humidity and slugging through the long and difficult disquisitions and reaching some amazing compromises, they had completed and signed the Constitution. And General Washington, or George Washington at the time, who had been the president of the Constitutional Convention, had given the document to the convention secretary, Major William Jackson, and he was to transport it to the U.S. Congress, which was meeting at that time in New York City. So Washington had also given Major Jackson two important accompanying letters to transmit with the Constitution. One of them was the official transmittal letter, and the other was a personal letter from Washington to the then president of the Congress, whose name was Arthur St. Clair. Now, most of the framers felt a strong sense of accomplishment, Kim, and satisfaction with the efforts that they had invested in the Constitution, and of course with their results. But they were also realists, and they knew the document would face serious challenges from various segments of the population during this ratification process. So the framers were aware of the most common concerns most of the citizens shared about the proposed Constitution. The opposition thought it took too much power away from the states and gave it to the central government. And the other big thing that they were thinking about was that there was no Bill of Rights there, and there was no set formula for establishing the number of representatives. Now, that was completely deliberate, and we can read about that in Federalist 55 about not having a formula for that. And Congress was given the power to tax, which they hadn't had under the Articles of Confederation. And neither side had been satisfied with the treatment of slavery issue in the Constitution. In summary, many thought the new government under the proposed Constitution would become an all-controlling, tyrannical, centralized government. The framers also knew that even some of their fellow delegates were not supporters of the proposed Constitution. Many delegates had been chosen by their representative or the respective states to attend the Constitutional Convention, and they did not attend, such as Patrick Henry, for one. Of the 55 delegates that had attended at some time, there were never 55 delegates present at one time during the whole Constitutional Convention, but only 42 of those 55 attended regularly. And George Wythe's wife became ill. William Pierce, who wrote all the sketches, the biographical sketches, the short sketches of the framers, left to fight a duel in New York and afterwards remained in New York to attend the meetings of the Congress because he was also a member of Congress. In fact, many of the constitutional delegates from the southern states were also congressional delegates, and some of these attended the meetings of the Congress and not the convention. So New York initially had three delegates, but two of the three just left and went back to New York, leaving only Hamilton in Philadelphia. And that kind of hamstrung him and hamstrung New York, because there having only one delegate, New York was not allowed to vote. And Hamilton, he participated quite a bit in the Constitution, in the making of the Constitution, but he couldn't vote anything. So it kind of left him hanging there. Another issue concerning the framers was that what reaction was the proposed Constitution going to get from Congress? Congress had authorized them to only approve the Articles of Confederation, not to produce a completely new government document. And so the articles there, as we talked about before, required that any changes to it required unanimous consent from all 13 states, which that's a very
high bar. Wow,
no kidding. And it's virtually unattainable with the different thoughts and perceptions that the different states had. So in our new Constitution, this proposed Constitution, in Article 7 of the Constitution, there were changes such as amendments required approval of three-fourths of the states. It could be for the three-fourths of the state legislatures or popular conventions. So those three-fourths, that came to 9 of the 13 states. General Washington's official transmittal letter to Congress said that it was the opinion of the convention. He was kind of cheeky in doing this because it was under their authorization that he was doing that. But, you know, Washington had a lot of cheekiness about him, and that was good. I mean, he was very confident in what he was supposed to do. So his transmittal letter to Congress, one of those two letters that I said that was carried by Major Jackson, said that it was the opinion of the convention, the Constitutional Convention, that the Constitution be laid out before the Congress and afterwards submitted to a convention of delegates chosen in each state. And it was very particular about that, chosen in each state by the people thereof under recommendation of its legislature, not chosen by the legislature, but chosen by elections of the people as for the delegates for their assent and ratification. Now, that's a real tricky part because, you know, they were afraid that Congress may take it and want to review it before they send it to the states. And, in fact, Congress wanted to do that. But they were really afraid that if Congress did that and they started making changes to it, any changes that they made to the Constitution would have to be approved by all 13 states. And Rhode Island wasn't even participating. So, you know, that would have been impossible to do.
So, Ben, let's stop right there because let's go to break. And when we come back, we'll continue. I find this so fascinating. So we're talking with Ben Martin. And this is regarding America's founding heritage and the important documents and speeches that contributed to that. This show is brought to you by the Harris family. But before we go to break, we have on the line with us Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Kim.
I know you're a big fan of Ben Martin.
Yep, I sure like listening to Ben.
So one thing we wanted to talk about, you sent me a text yesterday that a young person that you know had seen on Instagram that there had been a post regarding going down and rioting on this last weekend. And what's your thoughts on that? I just find it really troubling, Jason McBride.
Well, I'm not on social media, so I mean, I find all of the operations of this type of stuff interesting, but this was posted on Instagram and was forwarded to me on Thursday. And basically, it almost looks like a flyer that you would see posted on a wall or a telephone pole. And, you know, it said, no plans for the weekend. Now you do. It said, give them hell. 8 p.m. Saturday, August 22nd, Denver Police Department headquarters. It gives the address, and it says, bring your gear. So, you know, this is how, you know, these anarchists and rioters and these criminals are communicating. And, you know, with the social media company saying they're not going to allow posts that have misinformation or that are, quote, bad or whatever, I find it interesting that they'll allow, you know, basically a terrorist group to operate using their platform like this.
Yeah, it really is fascinating. And of course, there were riots in Denver and destruction of property this last weekend. And to your point, I think the censorship, actually, we had one of Rick Turnquist's op-eds. We had put it on Facebook, and we wanted to do some ads with it, and it was denied because it said of the language. But what the language was, it was a picture of the Capitol, which had a four-letter word on it, but that's what the Capitol looked like, but yet they wouldn't let us post that op-ed because of that picture. But yet here you've got, as you mentioned, anarchists that are posting on Instagram. So we just wanted to make that point. So Jason McBride, you know, I think there's a lot going on in the market. I think that people should really assess their risk tolerance, take a look at their portfolio. And I know you and your team at Presidential are the people to do that.
Well, certainly we can help with that. You know, you could take a look and see kind of where you're at. I had a nice couple come in the other day. We looked over their entire situation, and I had a couple of suggestions for them. But, you know, I was kind of like, you guys are in great shape just the way you are. If you wanted to do these couple of things, you could, but there's absolutely no pressure. There's no reason that you have to. You know, I don't think we use the tactics to try to scare people into doing things. You just kind of present possible alternatives and let them make a decision on their own whether they think it might be something that's beneficial to them. But again, if you're in great shape already, we're going to point that out and not try to make up a story to say you're in bad shape just to get you to change what you're doing and move and do business with us.
Well, and these honest assessments are so important to be able to work with people that you totally trust. So Jason McBride, you are a treasured partner of the Kim Munson Show. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great show, Kim.
Okay, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue with Ben Martin, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, with America's founding heritage, these important documents and speeches that made us what we are. So we need to know why we believe what we believe. That's why we're doing this show. And thank you to the Harris family for bringing this to you. We will be right back.
Metropolitan Total Property is more than landscaping. Locally owned and operated since 1987, their team is proud to be your neighbor and live in the community. Metropolitan Total Property stands behind their work, and your complete satisfaction is their top priority. Kim Munson highly recommends Metropolitan Total Property for landscaping and more. She was one of their very first clients way back in 1987. Be sure to check out MetropolitanTotalProperty.com for their complete menu of services. Again, that's MetropolitanTotalProperty.com.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and be sure and check out our website. That is KimMunson.com, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well, and go over to Facebook and give us a like. On the line with me is my friend Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian. He graduate from West Point, also a former Army Ranger, and he has a deep love for America's heritage. In fact, I took some classes that Ben was giving, and it just brought the men and women alive that were so instrumental in the founding of America. We're talking about the Constitution and the ratification of the Constitution. So, Ben, before we went to break, you said the delegates were very concerned that Congress, once they got their hands on the Constitution, they might want to make some changes. Yet you also said that Washington had sent the Constitution to them, so they're looking at it. So what's going on exactly? I'm not quite sure I understand that.
Well, it had to go to Congress first. The Constitution had to go to Congress first because only Congress could send the Constitution out to the states. And that was all set up when the Congress gave them authorization to make changes to the Articles of Confederation. They were just worried that under the Articles of Confederation, it would take 13 states' approval on any changes they made, and they knew that that would be impossible. So one of the things that they did, you know, some of the people after they had finished, some of the people, our framers, after the convention was over, they went to New York to Congress because they were members of the Confederation Congress. And so then they could be part of it and they could help influence. And Madison was one of those people, and Madison was very persuasive. And if we get a chance, I'm going to read a quote about Madison's persuasion. Anyway, he was very persuasive, and he convinced Congress that all they needed to do was send the Constitution out to the states with the directions that that Washington had given to them so that they would form these conventions of popular people, not from the state legislatures. And those people would be, those representatives, those delegates would be elected by the people, so that this would truly be we the people. This would be approved by them and not the legislatures. Because there were a few of the legislatures that kind of resented this new constitution because it was going to take their place away. You can understand that. So that part was fixed, you know, because of the intervention of Madison. And so then, so that seemed like that was going to be an easier task because it would be only 9 of 13 states. But there were some other complications. First of all, Rhode Island had not sent delegates to Philadelphia to the convention, and they were unlikely to ratify. So that makes it now 9 of 12 instead of 9 of 13. And then there was word on the street that North Carolina might not ratify. So now it's down to 9 of 11. Also, Georgia and South Carolina had been very demanding in the Constitutional Convention on the issue of slavery, which if they pulled out, that would make it 9 of 9. So the odds did not look so good now. But there were even more difficulties that the framers were faced with. Earlier, we had said that only 42 delegates stayed through the convention. But if we remember from our discussion last month, only 39 actually signed the Constitution. The three that did not sign were Governor Edmund Randolph of Virginia and George Mason of Virginia. And we talked about George Mason quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And then there was Elbridge Gerry from Massachusetts. Now, these were three men of great influence. Three heavyweights from two of the largest and most prominent states. So now the odds for ratification would seem almost impossible. However, people like Hamilton and Madison and Franklin and Washington were not easily intimidated, even when facing seemingly overwhelming odds. Does anyone remember the Christmas of 1776 mm-hmm. and the battles of Trenton or Princeton?
Mm-hmm.
They first identified the critical states needed for ratification, and there were four. The big states, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Virginia, and New York. They determined the first steps in their strategy was to win big, win early, and gain momentum. So Delaware and Pennsylvania had started a rivalry to become the first state to ratify. But Delaware's legislature began its new session in October of 1787, right after the Constitution had been approved by the Constitutional Convention. And by early November, they had called for elections for the state ratifying convention to be held in early December. So they elected 10 delegates from each of the three counties that made up Delaware for a total of 30 delegates. They elected all the people that they elected, all these delegates they elected, happened to be Federalists in favor of the Constitution.
Imagine that, huh?
Imagine that. I mean, but the people elected them. They weren't appointed by the legislature or anything. These are the people. These were elected by the people. So the 30 showed up early and earlier than they were scheduled to in Dover, Delaware, on 4 December. And 3 days later, on 7 December, Delaware was the first state to ratify the Constitution, and it was 30 to nothing. How can you imagine that?
Mm-hmm.
So Pennsylvania was also pushing hard to be the first state to ratify that Constitution. The Pennsylvania legislature, this is a pretty funny story, they had a two-thirds majority that were pro-Constitution, so they wanted to meet early to vote on a date for electing delegates to the ratification convention. On that set date, a few of the Federalists were not able to attend because some were sick and some had other things to do. So by the constricts of the Pennsylvania Constitution, the legislature had to have a quorum, and a quorum meant two-thirds people. So some of the Federalists knew that the Anti-Federalists would have to make up the difference so they could have a quorum to vote. So the Anti-Federalists were hiding in churches and public houses to prevent having a quorum. So the legislature had to send out officials to forcibly find these people and bring them back and have them sit in the assembly room so that they could meet the requirements for a quorum and then the vote. Although they didn't vote, they didn't have to. They didn't have to vote, or you know, because they just needed to be part of the quorum. And so on 6 October 1787, after all this shenanigans that happened, James Wilson was at the State House, and a group of citizens had gathered on the State House yard to ask questions about the proposed Constitution. And members of the legislature asked Wilson if he could address the gathered citizens, the crowd, and answer some of these questions. Wilson agreed, and in so doing gave the first speech in defense of the new Constitution. It was said of Wilson, with that State House speech, he had set the tone not only for the Pennsylvania debates, but for the whole country. Professor George Graham said, "There is no doubt that this speech played a major part in the ratification of the Constitution." The Pennsylvania ratifying convention occurred from 21 November to 12 December. And again, Wilson dominated the conversation in that convention because he was the only one from the Constitutional Convention that was at the Philadelphia ratifying convention. And so on 12 December of 1787, Pennsylvania ratified the Constitution 46 to 23. So now you'd already had two states that had ratified the Constitution. It was this aggressive plan, strategy that Washington and Madison had that really pushed this thing. And then New Jersey followed quickly. So you have these three states that are centered right there in the middle of the 13 colonies, the 13 states. New Jersey followed quickly behind Pennsylvania with an overwhelming 38-0 vote. Again, they had elected all Federalists for their delegation.
So, well, a couple of questions. Again, the strategy was win big, win early, and what was the last thing?
And to gain this momentum to keep it going, you know, that did help the states because they would see, hey, such and such state has ratified this. We've got to get on the ball here.
Okay. So, one other question, Ben. Yeah. It seemed like in one of the classes that I had that you had said that really people were very well informed, that they had they had the Constitution, the Declaration. They carried that around. I mean, everyday people like farmers and merchants. I mean, did everybody do that? Were they that well informed?
They were that well informed. In fact, one of the books that I used to prepare this and one of the books that I recommend to all your readers, it's called Ratification, and it's by Pauline Meyer. Unfortunately, no, she's no longer alive. She died in 2013. But this is a great book, and it talks about what the people were feeling at the time and what they knew, and it talked about all these people. She especially loved the Massachusetts people because they were told by all of their great speakers, all of their great orators up there, their lawmakers, they were told, hey, you guys don't have to attend this ratification convention. We'll take care of all that stuff. And they said, oh, no, we're not going to let you do that. That's our responsibility.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, Ben, we need to go to break. This always goes way, way too quick. Before we do that, though, also just wanted to mention Castlegate Knives. They are a family-owned business. They're located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. They have such a wide spectrum of knives from all over the world, and they're really a specialty knife store. They have knives for military, collectors, the sportsmen, kitchen knives, gift sets. And so go to castlegate.com for more information. They are a new valued partner of mine and would really appreciate that. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue on with Ben Martin.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. That way you get first look at all the things that'll be coming out the next week, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts and our op-eds. And we would appreciate it if you'd go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. On the line with me is Ben Martin. We're talking about America's founding heritage, these important documents and speeches that made America what we are. And we need to know why we will believe what we believe, particularly with what is going on in America today. This whole idea, the American idea, is worth preserving and protecting. And the way to do that, the way to engage in the battle of ideas, is to learn and to know what you're talking about. That's why we do this show. And thank you again to the Harris family for making this happen. Ben Martin, we're talking about the ratification of the Constitution. And you said that Washington and Franklin, Hamilton, the strategy,
Madison,
was win big, win early, and gain momentum. And so at this particular point, Delaware was first, then Pennsylvania, New Jersey. What happens from here?
So that was 3-0 already, and it hadn't even been, it was still in 1787. It was December. Now you have three yeses already, and New Jersey was 38-0, like we said before. And then came Georgia on 2 January. So this is just right after the turn of the year, and they ratified with a vote of 26-0. They, again, had picked almost all Federalists, as far as we can tell. Then came Connecticut, and led by the venerable Roger Sherman of the Grand Compromise fame that we talked about last month, ratified the Constitution on 8 January of 1788 by a score of 128-46. So pretty overwhelming there, too. Now we had ratified, we had five states, so this strategy was working out pretty good. And so there was only four to go to reach that magic number of nine. However, three of those four states were the critical big states of Massachusetts, Virginia, and New York, and it would not be easily done. So the next state to meet was Massachusetts, the one I told you about that Pauline Meyer said these people were the most engaged. They wanted to know. They knew all about it. They said when anybody mentioned, they would bring up a certain section in a certain article. All the people in the audience knew exactly what it was. So, I mean, it was
before TV.
That was before TV, absolutely. So that next state, Massachusetts, they had 370 delegates in their convention, more than any other state. And they met for nearly a month, from 9 January to 5 February, and they examined in detail most of the clauses in the Constitution. Toward the end of the month, these long deliberations, the responsible leaders from both groups, Federalists and Anti-Federalists, they came together to discuss their situation. And they mutually agreed they had been at this for nearly a month, and they were not making any noticeable progress. And furthermore, he said, the country is in crisis right now, and if we as Massachusetts do not ratify the Constitution, the whole effort in our country may fail. They earnestly sought to find common ground, just like had happened in our Constitutional Convention, and they would lead them to moving forward and providing a good example for the other states. So the common ground they found together and agreed upon was Massachusetts would ratify the Constitution now with the expectation that in the first Congress, amendments would be proposed to alter the Constitution. This common ground was the key to future successes and became known as the Massachusetts Compromise, and it would soon help the other states' factions to reach similar agreements. It would become the model for the remainder of the ratification campaign across the country. The Massachusetts delegates' ability to find common ground and to reach agreements was just amazing. They provided a good example and exhibited a sense of duty and responsibility. Massachusetts' John Hancock, Fisher Ames, and Samuel Adams stepped up and took the lead in this. And what is clear is that the Massachusetts Compromise secured the victory for the proponents of the Constitution because approximately 10 delegates changed their mind, and then the ratification passed in Massachusetts, 187-168. So they were... That was a pretty close compared to all the other ones.
So question on that. So the amendments that you're talking about, is that the Bill of Rights? Is that
That was the Bill of Rights. That's eventually Madison told people that when they were having difficulty in deciding that, he said, "I promise you, I will make this happen." And that was a pretty big promise because he had not been elected to that first Congress yet. So these things went pretty fast now that we had the Massachusetts Compromise.
Okay.
So Maryland came next. Well, New Hampshire came. They first met, and then they found out, hey, you know, we can't come to an agreement. So they started on 13 February, and by 22 February, they realized they weren't making any progress, and they said, let us postpone. Let us adjourn right now. And we will postpone it, and we'll come back together again in order to avoid what is beginning to look like the first ratification defeat. We don't want to do that. And so they stopped. And then the other states carried on. Maryland came next, and then South Carolina, and they passed the thing pretty well, 63-11 for Maryland and 149-73 for Maryland. South Carolina, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, Maryland and South Carolina. And then New Hampshire's delegates came back together in June of 1788 to restart the discussions. But they came back, and after 3 days of negotiations, five delegates adopted the Missouri Compromise. And on 21 June, just a few days, they ratified the Constitution by a vote of 57-47. And since New Hampshire was the ninth state to ratify the Constitution was officially adopted by the United States and became the law of the land. But they still needed to have those two big states, Virginia and New York. And so they started working on those. And in mid-October of 1787, Virginia started their ratification convention. They elected two delegates from each of the 84 counties, so they had a pretty big number, too. They debated the Constitution during the periods of 2 through 25 June 1788, and then five delegates changed their mind on 25 June. They adopted the Missouri Compromise, and they ratified the Constitution by a vote of 89-79. Now, New York started theirs on 17 June and went through the same Constitution page by page. In the second week, they received word that New Hampshire had ratified. Later on, by the end of June, they received word that Virginia had ratified the Constitution. And they continued to negotiate. Between 7 and 14 July, they tried to reach an agreement along the lines of the Missouri Compromise, but these efforts were defeated. Then on 26 July, they ratified the Constitution by 30-27, again, using the Missouri Compromise.
Or the Massachusetts Compromise.
Massachusetts, right? Compromise. So, yeah, I see Missouri Compromise. I'm sorry. I'm trying to go through this really fast right now.
I know.
Okay. Then on the first Congress met under the Constitution, in the very first session, Madison, who had won a seat in the new Congress, proposed that Congress endorse the incorporation of a Bill of Rights into the Constitution, saying we owe it to these people. We didn't make it conditional, but we did make an honorable promise to them. So Madison further proposed that the passages of the Bill of Rights be placed in Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution. And Roger Sherman came out of his seat, came unglued, and he said emphatically no. He was a supporter of the Constitution, but he said no. We want to keep the work of the framers pristine. If we are going to have a Bill of Rights, we will attach it at the end. Thus, the Bill of Rights became an amendment.
Wow.
And so after they did that, then North Carolina, who wasn't, and Rhode Island, both of whom weren't going to ratify the Constitution, realized that Madison had kept his promise and this Bill of Rights had been endorsed by the Congress. And on 21 November of 1789, North Carolina ratified it, and then Rhode Island refused 11 times to call a ratifying convention between February 1788 and January of 1790. So at the end of the second session of the first Congress, the Senate sent Rhode Island a message telling them to, quote unquote, join or die.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Oh, Ben Martin, we only have like a minute left.
Okay.
This has just been amazing. Just very quickly, what would be the final thought? I mean, it's now ratified. Rhode Island does decide to ratify, I assume.
Yeah,
right?
They do ratify it. You know, they took the hint, and on 29 May, 1790, something the framers thought would never happen, all 13 states ratified the Constitution. So, you know, it took them a few years, and then we had been working under the Constitution, the new Constitution, before those two actually ratified it, but they did come around to ratifying it. And if I could just say one thing, John Marshall, you know, the great member of our Supreme Court, the Chief Justice, he said later, he said, if I were called upon to say who of all men I have known had the greatest power to convince, I should perhaps say, it was Mr. Madison.
Ah, that's amazing. Ben Martin, these shows are so rich. Thank you so much. We're out of time, but we're going to do the next one next month. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome, and thank you. Bye.
Okay, and James Madison is our quote for today. He said, knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power knowledge gives. So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
I don't want to cry, but tell them if I don't serve.